SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Fairgrounds in New Orleans, a very good Monday, President's Day. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com, a cold and blustery Monday. But when it came to Saturday, absolutely glorious here and a fun-filled atmosphere. I've said it before after we came the first time. Not that I've been for Louisiana Derby Day, but you get the sense that Risen Star Day is the perfect, you know, the perfect big day to come here, because Louisiana Derby Day, they throng the place, as it was on Saturday, the kind of crowd that is just perfect, full and had a great crackling atmosphere, the good racing that led up to the stakes, and then, you know, some very popular results given the sets of connections and the horsemen involved and owners. And it had a perfect tone, and other than one injury that at least is turning out not as bad as initially feared, Harlan Punch. Other than that, it was really a wonderful day here. We'll do a lot of recapping. Tom Amos is going to join me first in person, and we'll have the Tom Amos the Tom Amos hour. And I'll turn it over to him. He's a broadcast professional. It was a big day for Amos, and I know we should technically start with the Risen Star result and talk about, you know, War of Will following up his LeCompte. But to some degree, wasn't Serengeti Empress the key performance, the performance that you want to look at and be impressed with? I think so, and we'll talk to Amos. It did turn out, as for those that read what I suggested, it did turn out that Bell's the one scratching, the Neil Pessin, who looked to be the other speed, the other clear speed. It turned out to be really key, because Serengeti Empress, if she was going to get a lead and, you know, not be, you know, have somebody breathing down her neck, there was a real risk of that happening, and it did. And really, everybody else that had questions and you wondered about, really very few ran races that, you know, if you bet them, you were projecting. And, you know, for those that, you know, went and read my analysis, I Saturday morning, I could not make heads or tail. I suggested initially, yes, that Serengeti Empress had a chance to wire. And so I protected her as an A. I did not expect that performance, and we'll find out if Amos did. I said on Friday, with every passing visit that we discussed, and the Amos horses that were coming off layoffs, you know, notably Lone Sailor and Serengeti Empress, you know, three workouts and, you know, coming off the farm. And Amos has got big numbers on layoffs. Big numbers on layoffs. And, you know, you trust the people talking about trust your eyes. Well, trust your eyes there, because Amos has them ready. And just because there's three modest workouts printed, it doesn't mean that the horse isn't out there in between those works putting in serious gallops. And so, you know, being concerned that They're not going to be ready. If they weren't ready, then how is Amos, what, 30% off the layoff? He's just too good. Lone Sailor, we'll talk about Lone Sailor. I'm sure Amos mildly disappointed, and the Bensons, but it was a return. It was the start. There were a few of those kinds of performances, in fact, by four-year-olds yesterday, Saturday, and including Carrick in that allowance. And Carrick was up against a tremendous, that inside rail turf bias that you were warned about with the rails coming down. And what a tremendous job between Scully starting things on Friday with the $19 winner, Chad Schexnader giving you a $19 winner, Marcus's insights, and Frank McGoey. You got to be thrilled with the kind of information that they all laid out for Saturday. I'm mentioning Carrick because there was very little, I think, that could have gotten, I suppose, a little more distance, and Carrick would have gotten by Tiger's rule, and I think it was a compass zone. But that's what you were dealing with, and that's what made Synchrony's win. Joe Bravo with just a brilliant ride. Just brilliant. Knowing that the inside was great and that Synchrony was going to have to rally into a pace, Joe did an inside-outside trip, extricated himself off the inside path from what, the nine hole? I think he was in the nine hole to start. Yeah, he was in the nine. Gets down inside, saves all the ground, uses the conveyor belt inside paths, and then kicks outside and runs them down. And Synchrony wins, and it kind of came through as the single, if you played it that way. I mean, I did. And how about the performance of Silver Dust? We'll talk to Brett Calhoun. Brett's got to actually head out. He's got an appointment, but we'll talk to Brett by phone. Brett Calhoun, you were told, warming up, getting hot, Brett Calhoun time. And Calhoun's horses, they fired. And first graded stake win. What a nice moment for Jack Gilligan, who's so likable. And Jack Gilligan, with a terrific trip and ride, set up shop outside stalking on the very flighty, make no mistake, this Silver Dust. This is a goofball. And you saw him when he was alone in the stretch. Once he had gotten clear, he was getting looking around, and he jumped over to one Leah. He's all over the place. This is a horse. I mean, even though he's 5 years old, 18, that was his 19th start. Now four wins and the graded stake success for Tom Durant and Brett Calhoun. And earlier, Calhoun, we'll have to talk about that maiden winner that was suggested and came through by my standards. That was tremendous performance. There were a lot of the things that we discussed that were, really kind of came through. And the one that kind of got by us, the one that got through everybody, the maiden third race with all those fancy horses, including the Honor Code sibling and more. So a lot of performances that we want to digest. Get the Prize is the horse, the Al Stahl Firster, and obviously a horse with tremendous upside. Casey, start the I got to go get Amos because apparently there's a door locked that's keeping him from getting in here. So we'll go to take the break, and we'll come back. We'll start with Amos, and we'll talk about Serengeti Empress, but also, I don't know if you noticed, you want to talk about Amos's horses from the weekend. How about Roylin at what? What was he, 80-1? I think fourth. We'll talk to Mark Cassie, too. Mark's not here. Really fish up, really should go get Davey Carroll, too. But we'll get Mike, we'll get Mark Cassie on the phone. He's probably back in Florida. But the 14 hole. The 14 hole proved no obstacle for War of Will. And it was pretty much as you kind of thought was going to happen. You know, there was a potential for some little bit of speed inside. And as it turned out, it was the horse outside, Gunnet, from even further wide, that wanted to get to the lead. Maniwa, surprisingly, a little bit. I don't know if that, I haven't heard if that was instruction by the cat man or what, but Maniwa was further back and kind of went around one paced. And even though, you know, the race came back, you know, moderately from a fig standpoint, take a close look at the horses that finished second, third, fourth, and fifth. Country House ran very well, as expected, 7-1. Country House, after three quarters, was ninth. Roland was 13th. Hot Creek Hustle was 12th. Limonite was 11th. That's a chart that is telling you that War of Will ran very well. When all the closers and no other horse that was near the pace, when they're all in the bottom half of the chart, War of Will, don't be fooled. And boy, you want to see a horse that looked like a statue. I mean, people were absolute slack jawed looking at him in the paddock. I mean, like a burnished wood, neck arched, focused. This is a serious horse, and I know people are saying, "Oh, it was a slow race." No, okay, all right, we'll see what Cassie thought. All right, let me go find Amos, and we'll come right back and get Tom Amos talking. Which isn't hard. Back after this. It's the Fairgrounds.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is used to support Pennsylvania. Brian Sanfratello, please visit us at pabred.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and catch the summer on Afternoon Delights, absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Let me in, woo!
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on SiriusXM Radio.
We're back at the races. Back, went and found Tom Amos. And Tom, how long have you been at the fairgrounds?
Don't do this to me. I've been here a long, long time. I know my way around.
The kid comes in from New York. He set up shop. I got the office sitting here, and I had to go fish out of a stairwell.
Yeah, well, I know all the shortcuts.
You're down on the, you're down on the apron, you're down track side and on the back side, and of course on Saturday you were in the winner's circle, and Serengeti Empress, that had to be so satisfying after the way her 2-year-old season concluded.
I think that's well put. Her 2-year-old season concluded in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies, as you know. It was a hard run race, particularly with a couple of horses that were designed to try to make the lead out of the gate. And of course, that's the winner, Jaywalk, as well as my horse, Serengeti Empress. Jaywalk had about a half a length in front of me and did what all good aggressive riders do in big races. He made it very tight on my filly going into the first turn, and next thing you know, Jaywalk's on the lead by herself, and I'm relegated to behind her. And it was a very unnerving and rattling experience for my filly, and she never recovered from it. We were always planning on giving her some time for the 3-year-old season after that. It was a rest that was needed, both mentally and physically. She's come back very strong. You were here. She looked great in the paddock. She walked around like she was the one, physically imposing, and she left the gate and took it to him.
And that she did. And, you know, it's certainly not to discount the way in which things unfolded. You couldn't have been disappointed that Neil Pessin came out of the race.
Yeah, so Neil had potentially some speed in the race, and there were a couple of others. But the difference between horses like Neil's and I think the other one was Inside of Me, maybe Ian Wilkes' horse, Leper, who was riding, who also was coming off some one-turn races. Those are horses that are trying to decide whether they can get the distance. So in the trainer's mind, and I don't mean to read the mind of Ian Wilkes or Neil Pessin, who didn't participate because he ended up scratching, but in the trainer's mind, when you're making that transition from sprint to route, you're always saying, hey, I know I've got speed because I've shown it in these sprints, but I've got to regulate that speed to get the route aground. You know, so they're still testing the waters, and I don't think you're going to see those kinds of horses be sent from the gate. My horse, on the other hand, she's shown that she can get the route aground. She's shown she can do it and go very fast early. So it was a race where we said, hey, you know, we're going, damn the torpedoes, and we'll see if they can catch us.
I'll ask about the long-term scenario that you're going to have to deal with, but you're going to see the next time she runs, which will be Fairgrounds Oaks, you're going to see a set of PPs that show four wins by 5.5, 13.5, 19.5, and 5. And those races have ones. The Schuylerville and the Juvenile Fillies, and granted there's circumstances involved in both, but when she hasn't gotten to the front or at least been running with a clear view in front of her, it hasn't worked. How do you deal with that?
Right. Well, look, that's a fair question. Really, going into this race over the weekend, the Rachel Alexandra, there was a question as to how successful my horse would be going around a ground, period, because although she had won very easily in the Grade 2 at Churchill Downs back in September, going two turns, that was a race where when you start to review the resume of the fillies she ran against, it wasn't a very good race for a graded status. So I think a lot of the wise guys were thinking, hey, this is a horse that was a precocious two-year-old, but I'm going to play against her at these short odds at age three. You know, that was a legitimate question then. She showed that she can do it. So here we are today, and at some point we're going to have to be able to say, can we or can't we rate? I mean, the races get tougher each time you get a little closer to the Kentucky Oaks, and we're just going to see what pace scenarios we get, and we're going to adapt.
You talk about the distance, and I just wanted to pull up Havisham, and this is her first foal, so there's no siblings to go by. It was a very good day for Pin Oak, by the way.
Yes, it was.
Between the Synchrony's win and then half an hour later, Alternation getting another graded stake win from a three-year-old. Very nice for them, and it was really nice for Mrs. Abercrombie to be here. We'll get to that in Stidham, but it sure looks the way she moves like, you know, like the mile and an eighth is not going to be a problem.
Well, off her resume, you'd have to say it wouldn't be. But again, it brings up the question you asked just a minute ago. What happens if she gets challenged on the lead? So, you know, that's what happened against Jaywalk. There were some circumstances surrounding that very, very fast pace up front in the Breeders' Cup Fillies. And obviously, she's a very, very good horse. You know, I don't know the answer to that, only to say those questions will be answered as the spring goes on, and we're going to try and be adaptable depending upon pace and races.
Well, the other question that certainly was being bandied about was the preparation and the amount of work that went into it. And I just, as part of the introduction before the break, I said, you know, for those that were worried, because it came up on Friday on the weekend preview, three workouts, Lone Sailor also, you had been quoted as saying, well, you know, they did some work on the farm. And I made the point that, you know, just because there's only three published works that are solid, including a bullet, it doesn't tell the whole story.
Right.
You're 34% off the layoff. You've been strong like that for a long time, and it's not an accident. To explain what you're doing between the published works that gets a horse ready that's been off basically for 4.5 months.
You know, Steve, in the last I don't know, 10 or 15 years with the advent of more racing you can watch on the internet, we're getting to watch workouts of horses a lot more than we used to. And so just a time on a workout doesn't really tell the tale.
Yeah.
And so in the case of Serengeti Empress, one of those workouts, she spotted a pair of workhorses almost 10 lengths in front of her. And her job was to sit behind those horses, catch them at the finish, and on top of that, to gallop out very strongly all the way around the turn. So although it shows a 5/8 work, what it doesn't show is how quickly she finished up in that work, as well as the gallop out afterwards. So that 5/8 work in company, it was her best work. It's two works ago, I believe. That work was the one that told me, hey, she's very fit. She's retained a lot of fitness from, you know, back in November when she ran the Breeders' Cup. I think we can make this race. Of course, there's a gray area when you're doing that. But, you know, the works indicated to me that she was ready to come to the races and compete.
And what do you do in between? I mean, in terms of daily gallops and 2 minute licking what's your program?
Yeah. So, I'll probably get some pushback on this, but for my program, I always think of it as getting a horse fit in two different ways, both aerobically, which is the gallops we do. We'll do the, 5 days of the week, those gallops will be about a mile and a half to 2 miles. And then anaerobic, which is the quick works, the workouts. You can't have a horse fit without both. They have to have that stamina from the gallops, and they have to have that ability to quicken and use that quickness through the workouts. We're matching those up on a weekly basis. We're monitoring the horse and what's going on in the barn. Is the horse eating up? Is the horse looking bright? Is the horse looking energetic on the track? How's her hair coat? All those things go into, you know, what we're going to do on a daily basis with our horse and how we're gauging how she's enjoying the training, in this case of Serengeti Empress, how she's enjoying her training, and is she moving forward from it. If we see any negative signs, you know, a horse is a little bit dull, horse it's not eating up as she normally does, any number of things. The language the horse tells you, any number of things in her language back to me that's not right, well, then we slow down. We do things differently. But she never missed a beat and moved forward all the way.
What do you do? What's your rider policy and staffing? And you know, does the exercise riders, do they work, or do you bring in? And we do have to talk about James Graham taking over here, and you know, that's part of the policy. But how do you approach the riding staff?
So I have one rider that works my horses, also gallops, and I'll interchange him on horses. You know, just based on timing, like are the riders out that day, are the professional riders out that day. But James has worked this horse. It was the first time he got to ride her in the afternoon, but he's worked with her and he knows her. So, it wouldn't have mattered who was on the horse, but I did want James to get a comfort on her to know the horse, and he was able to do that.
James Graham thought of first and foremost as a turf rider, and because of pace, the pace demands for turf riding, a guy like this on a pace horse, on a speed horse, can really do some wonders in terms of hands and allowing her head without letting her run off.
Yeah, so she's pretty sensible. Her high cruising speed and those fractions she's sending in those races, she'll relax underneath you. And if you watch the race closely, you know, you'll see a couple of things that tell you she's relaxed. Down the backside, when she's clear of that field and the Rachel Alexander, her ears are going back and forth. She's waiting for a command. That's always a really good sign with a racehorse. When you see those ears flopping back and forth, tells you the horse isn't so engaged in what she's having to do that she doesn't have a lot of energy left. With those ears going back and forth, I know that my horse is comfortable where she is and that there's something in the tank. And by the time we got to the backside, I was able to turn to my wife, Colleen, and say, it's going to take a good effort to beat this horse.
Yeah. There were none of those forthcoming. A couple of little notes that jump off the page. She is 4 for 6 with wins on 4 different racetracks.
Yeah, I don't think she needs to take a racetrack with her. I like that. I like the fact that her next two starts, assuming she's healthy, and she is very healthy right now, will be at Fairgrounds, where she's had success, and at Churchill Downs, where she's had success. So I'm excited about that.
Joel Politti and the family and the team, they were pretty excited about, you know, just even the opportunity, and then you know, with what transpired.
Got to talk about Dr. Joel Politti. You know, he's from Columbus, and he loves racing. He's been around it since he was a kid. We worked together. We actually were at the sale when I found this filly, Serengeti Empress, at Keeneland. It was one of those days where the, you know, the medium was pretty strong, but we were able to find what we thought was a value. I liked her from the start, very athletic. Being by alternation, Mrs. Abercrombie's sire, there wasn't a lot of demand for that sire at the sale. He's relatively unknown, but he threw a really, really good athletic horse in Serengeti Empress. I wanted her, was surprised that we got her for $70,000, and it's been a real joy, and it's also an extra bonus to be in the winner's circle with one you purchased at the sale.
Well, and that was my that was going to be really the follow up. I was going to ask about the purchase, because this now looks like she already looked like a great bargain with the stake wins at two, but you know, increasingly she's looking like an outlandish success, $350,000 or so in earnings already, and multiple graded stake winner. Awfully nice resume being built for her, and this was about as perfect a step forward as a three-year-old, including from the FIG standpoint, the 91 buyer, and just, you know, did everything right here, and excited for James Graham. In fact, part of my opening remarks were what a nice day it was for sets of connections. In fact, Jack Gilligan getting his first graded stake win, that was fun, and, you know, Joe Bravo, who you know, is really clever, and I thought put on a remarkable ride given the status of that turf course with those inside paths.
Right.
It was,
right,
it was,
I watched
sweat.
That race. You're talking about Synchrony?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, Joe is he's a very good rider. I think, having been to Saratoga the last few years and having worked that meet, doing the Fox show for them, the late Pick Five, and getting to watch that group of riders ride there, I said it more than once, that group of riders, and of course, I mean, everybody knows the top guys there are the best in the country, but that group of riders, and I'm talking about when you go down to the second five or even the second ten beyond the first five, those guys are so skilled. I think that's the best riding colony in the country, what we have at Saratoga every August.
Going to talk about what went on in the Risen Star, because you were involved, and it very well may be that nobody noticed that Roylin finished a fast closing third in here at 69-1, and the War of Will. You know, your view of things. You had to be thrilled with what happened here.
Oh, I think we were. You know, the owner, Jim Durlacher, and his wife Mary were here for the race down from Indianapolis, and this is the race that we thought Roiland was going to run in the LeCompte. I saw a great transition in the morning from his two-year-old starts to coming into January of this year. He got a little bigger, he gotten stronger, his workouts had gotten better, and you could see that if you looked at the past performance, and I really thought the LeCompte would be a coming-out party for him. He just didn't run his race, and it's, you know, it's some horses, it's not just how they prepare physically, but they have to get it right mentally, and some take longer than others, and with Roiland, I thought we took a big step forward in the Risen Star in a race that's certainly set up to close, but we really came from left field, and that was only a mile and a 16th. The race is going to get longer from here on out, and if you watch the last part of the race, which is the only part of the race you'll see him, so the last, say, 3 seconds of the race, he's closing very nicely to be a very clear third. And, you know, with that said, we're going to get one more chance to try to get some Derby points. And we're going to try to find a race, hopefully the Louisiana Derby. We'd like to run out of our backyard. That's going to have some pace in it, because he needs that to run his best race.
This is a successful appeal out of a Congaree mare, Anna Branch. It happens that Isotope is the is the full sib, I think, and a homebred for the Durlackers.
That's correct. And, I mean, Successful Appeal is one of those stallions that when you see him in the pedigree, there's two things. You know they could do anything, sprint, route, and he's one of those blue-collar pedigrees that you just – look, you're going to get your money's worth. I like – there's two stallions I like to see in the pedigree that we're going back in time, of course. But if I can see Carson City somewhere in the family or Successful Appeal, I have a lot of confidence in those babies.
Well, I'm assuming they sold the – did they sell Isotope they must have sent out?
Oh, you're going
to – oh, no.
So in the two-year-old year, Isotope did not have a very good two-year-old year. She was with another trainer. I got her at three. And I had her at three, and I lost her to claim after she won a couple of races. She's just continued to progress.
Wow. Wow. All right. Well, listen, that happens. You've done it. you put that shoe on another foot yourself.
Yes, it does.
Does
happen.
Well, and this race, you know, coming out of the LeCompte where War of Will just overwhelmed the field, here the conversation and the speculation going in was, oh, he's in the 14 hole. It's going to be impossible. Wait a minute. There wasn't a whole lot of speed, and you had the sense that Gaffleone could set up shop and have really the same trip that he had in the LeCompte, and that's pretty much what happened. He in the paddock, even owners of other horses were talking and were just gawking at what War of Will looked like.
Yeah, he looked great, and he ran great. And in a race where the pace backed up dramatically, he was the only one that stayed the trip. And whenever I'm handicapping and I can see a horse that overcomes the pace of the race, which he did, you're looking at a very good horse. I mean, a very good horse. I mean, this horse is going to be, I don't care who comes to town, he's going to be less than even money in Louisiana Derby, and he deserves it. He's a very good horse. I put him in as one of the top three-year-olds in the country right now. He stays healthy. He's going to make some noise at the Kentucky Derby for sure. The horse that ran second, Country House. If you're a trip handicapper and you watched his last race at Gulfstream where he just broke his maiden, that's all he did in his third start, he literally, from the one hole, took a left out of the gate and spotted the field about 50 yards right out of the gate. You had to love his race. When I saw him in the paddock and knowing that he has not left the gate well in any of his starts, and he's had more than one start, that was his fourth start, I was trying to watch his behavior. Because, look, you can forgive a horse for not leaving the gate well once, maybe even twice, but when they start showing a habit of that, and certainly in the case of Royland, he has too, you can't necessarily forgive that anymore. You have to wonder what's going on with the horse mentally. And he didn't leave the gate well again in the race here. But you've got one of the best trainers in the country in Bill Mott. He gets him right. He's probably every bit as good as our winner of the Risen Star race.
He's a big horse. You know, he's a kind of a big rangy type. And you know, I think with each passing week and month, with maturity and experience, he should only, you know, he should only get better. Very interesting too. Looking at Lucky out of the War Chant mare, and Mott did start him on the grass, which, you know, you look at that pedigree, you think, why not? And he certainly has jumped forward in his dirt tries, and he's kept good company too. And
of course, he has
the ill-fated the Alpatrani Kentucky Wildcat, who ran very well last week in the Sam Davis, but came away with needing surgery. So he's on the side. There were some horses closing, and a mile and an eighth could be a difference maker for you, Raylan, and Vicky Foley's horse ran good again.
She did. Vicky's horse ran very good, ran really good in the LeCompte, ended up fourth in this race. Back to country, to the Mott horse real quick, Country House. The other thing I would do as a handicapper, now I'm putting my handicapping hat on, I hope nobody minds, I would watch his behavior in the paddock. He got a little coltish in the paddock, you know, and that's never a good sign. So, you know, he's got room for improvement if you can correct those things, and that makes him a bit of a wild card in the upcoming races, and I'm sure you're going to get a square price on him.
War of Will, Country House, Roy Lyon, Hot Creek Hustle, Limonite, Manny Wah, who was supposed to be the speed and could not just couldn't get there. Mr. Money, with his chance, ended up, he also was chasing. And Owendale, you know, all the horses that you were kind of thinking could jump up and so forth, really only Country House and Roland really made that forward move that people were looking for. But the winner, absolutely that good. A couple of other highlights as well. Tom Amos with us. We're up atop Fairgrounds. And, Tom, we'll get to Lone Sailor in a second. I want to ask about the maiden race. And even before we talk about Tappet Wise, who was third, how good was the Al Stahl winner here, this Get the Prize in a fancy group?
I thought Get the Prize, a first-time starter for Al Stahl going six furlongs, was the most impressive winner I've seen at the Fairgrounds meet thus far. Again, if you're someone that not only handicaps by speed figures but also visually is watching these races, go watch Get the Prize gallop out past the wire. His extension of stride is remarkable after running that quickly, less than 110 for the six furlongs. I was watching the race with Al, and I told him afterwards, I said, did you happen to catch that gallop out? He goes, no, I was too busy being excited and making sure I had my voucher in my pocket that I used on him. So I said, well, go watch it, because man, oh man, did he run well. 1580, I believe, huh?
More. It's 1960.
Well, that tells you who bet on him and who didn't.
Oh, wait. Yeah. 87 buyer for the debut. And afterward, I was doing some tweeting. I go to look on Thoroughgraph on the trainer stats. Al Stahl, not exactly notorious for first start statistics, four for his last seven with 2 seconds, and the one that was off the board won in her second start. And I said that to Al afterward and later on in the day, and he said, well, he said that makes up for the previous 30 or so that he was over. He said he was over.
He's had a remarkable number of seconds this meet, and I know that's bothering him, but I bet you that ROI on those maiden first-time starters is substantial.
Well, this didn't hurt either. Talk a little bit about your maiden, and happened to be in the paddock with you, and nice. And that was the first time I've met Mandy Pope. And talk a little bit about how that went for you guys with Tappet Wise.
So Tappet Wise is a horse that is really demanding of a lot of ground. And, you know, as time goes on, he's going to get better. He was third here the other day, and that was the furthest he's gotten to run in his career, coming at the end. But a lot of times on big race days, like Saturday, speed is a great quality to have, particularly at the Fairgrounds. So with Tappet Wise, he was up against it. He came from well back, and he just kind of a finish on the end that shows you there's something in the future there. Interestingly, I will say this, and you can agree or disagree, but with Serengeti Empress's win on the front end in the race before the Risen Star, and as much speed that ran well on Risen Star Day, the Risen Star being the last race of the day, I think her win on the front end had a lot of people's minds, trainers and jockeys, thinking, hey, I want to be close. And I think that had a lot to do with how one of the reasons why the pace was so quick in the Risen Star. So we're going to, for Roland's third place finish, closing on the end, we'll give the assist to Serengeti Empress in winning the Rachel Alexander on the front end.
Well, and this race, the seventh, we talked about this extensively going in to the weekend, and it just so happens that back in December, was it December or was it maybe in January, we had Neil Howard and Parade Field was going to run like the next day, and Neil had that nice filly that won the Ontario bred.
For Samsung Farms.
Yes.
Right. Right.
That he's, I'm afraid that I think Neil has to be a team player and let Malcolm Pierce take that one, or you know, whoever's taking it back home to Woodbine later.
That filly ran a very good second off of that win.
Yes,
this past week. And kind of had the overland trip. The winner got through on the rail. That's a horse to watch for the future.
Well, this whole group between Parade Field and the winner by my standards. And Brett Calhoun, all he had to do was get over the hump of that 3,000th win.
Yeah.
now he's inches away from 4,000. I mean, he's won. It seems like he's won 1,000 races in 10 days.
He's a very good trainer. I know he was frustrated how long it took him to get to 3,000. But he's got a lot to be proud of. I was one of the first to congratulate him when he went to the winner's circle. He deserves it.
Well, and this winner, by my standard, 78 buyer, awesome walk and roll for Cassie and Mrs. Weber, was second, and Ewan and Mandy Pope, third. And there was also Golden Tiger in here, the wedding toast sibling. So this was a serious bunch, the seventh race maidens. That was your Saturday, and to be honest, I have not looked ahead. What's going on today? You got you involved today?
I'm involved. I have a horse running today, Trust in Diane. She left the gate a little leisurely in her last start and ended up being second from off the pace. I think we're going to reverse that trend today, so can this be my international tout of the day? What do you think?
Yeah.
I like Trust in Diane today. I think she's going to run a good race for us. Seventh race. That's correct.
Seventh race. And you know, I had such a goofy week last week traveling and coming out of Vegas and the NHC. Did you do anything on premiere night at Delta?
I didn't do anything on premiere night, but I did do a few things in the NHC. You didn't see my name there, did you, in the NHC?
No.
Yeah, that's because I have a pseudonym, Brent Sumja. He's one of my best friends. Brent,
nice.
Brent was my assistant trainer way back when. Brent is a very serious horse player.
Oh, gotcha.
And a very good horse player. And we collaborated on a few things during the NHC, and we had some luck. So I had fun. I had fun helping him out.
That's great. And, well, TVG, well represented. I had Ice Cold Exacta Dave Weaver. I had Dave on the other day winning the consolation.
He handicaps a lot better than he plays golf. That's all I can tell you.
Oh, hey now. I love it. Too funny. Tom, just a terrific, terrific middle part of the meet here. And I said as part of the introduction, you know, this is now my second Risen Star in 4 years. And even though I haven't been for Louisiana Derby Day, I get the sense that this is the day to come. For starters, it's always either right before or right after Mardi Gras, so it's got the city atmosphere. And Louisiana Derby Day, I mean, given as brisk as it was here Saturday, Louisiana Derby Day has got to be a little ridiculous.
There's 2 days of the meet that I think are really cool here. The opening day, or kind of the opening day, it's Thanksgiving Day and also Louisiana Derby Day. The Millennium crowd comes out and they dress in throwback attire.
Oh, fun.
I mean, really, we're going back to like the 30s. You think you're watching a Seabiscuit movie. And it's not, I'm not talking about 10 people. I'm talking about 500 people. And it's a little known secret here that probably isn't talked about enough, but it is so cool to watch. And they're all having a great time. And then, of course, you have your regulars here as well. The weather's always good by the time we get to the Louisiana Derby. So it's very mild temperatures. Those are my favorite days.
Well, and I can't dismiss you without I forgot to bring Lone Sailor up.
Yeah. So
I circle back around.
I think his race was a little forgettable, obviously. But that was a race where the pace was remarkably slow for the day. They went the half in like 50 seconds. And I'd mentioned earlier, Steve, to you that when we turned down the backside with Serengeti Empress, I said, well, it's going to take a really good effort to beat her based on where she is and how she's doing. In the mine shaft with Lone Sailor, I was saying just the opposite. When they turned down the backside and I saw how slow they were going, I was like, this is going to be an impossible task to overcome. I'm not taking anything away from Brett Calhoun's horse. That is a very good handicap horse. He looked good on paper, and he ran great that day.
I got a nice ride, too, from Gilligan, and he's a goofball, that horse. Even though he's a five-year-old Tappet now, he's still flighty.
Well, they have that in him, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah,
but, I mean, you would think by the time your horse has run 19 times, some of that, you know, should be...
Yeah, I'll take that kind of goofy.
Well, you're going to have to take that goofy because I understand that Mandy Pope has got 30 Tappets in the pipeline.
She has not mentioned that to me. I'm going to have to give her... I'm going to have to call her out on that. I hope she's not thinking about somebody else.
You better make sure you're in line and... you know, because Ralph's on speed dial. I'm sure
speaking of the 3-0 Philly division, Mandy's horse with Ralph came back and ran a very nice race down at Gulfstream. It was only her first start since Breaker Maiden at Saratoga last year. That's a horse to be on the lookout for this spring. Her name slips my memory right now. I apologize. But that's a very nice filly.
Where do you go? New Orleans handicap for Lone Star.
For Lone Sailor, it's you know, you got to throw that race out. It just nothing went the way that makes him run his best race, and so he's middle of the pack, and it's his first race since November, and we're going to call that a get ready race.
Well, and there was a few of that. There was a few of those. I mentioned Carrick for Tom Morley and Donegal. I mean, up against that rail bias on a distance that isn't, it's a little short for him. He ran great. I know Jerry and his partner, we kind of walked out at the same time, and I know they were a little disappointed, but better have that in an allowance and be ready for your stake in a month.
Yeah, and I do agree with you that when they took the rail down this past week on the turf course, speed was a great commodity to have on the turf course.
Unbelievable. Have to thank you for coming up here, and we're lucky lucky you didn't end up locked in a stairwell. give everybody that are on their way here for Mardi Gras, for anything else. I didn't do as much this time around because every fairgrounds opportunity, I run down that list that we did on my first trip. Let's see if you've updated any of your favorite jaunts. Here we are. Look at this. It's right on my page. I saved it all the time. Where's Amos's pushes? Brightson's.
Frank is out here a lot. The chef and owner, and he's a very good handicapper, but he's a better chef.
Kenton's.
Yeah, that place actually closed.
Oh, really?
So we're
going
to put a scratch by that.
All right.
Yeah,
so
the rent got too high there. They couldn't afford it.
All right. So Kenton's is gone. Desi Vegas is.
Oh, yeah. Desi's my man. So he's got a few outlets.
Yeah,
Mr. John's is
Mr.
his.
John's. Keenan and I love Mr. John's.
Desi downtown. Desi's got a place out in Metairie now. Also a Desi Vegas Steakhouse. He's a super fun guy. And he's always out here Mardi Gras Day because he gets that day off. He doesn't have to work at his restaurants.
How funny.
So he comes and plays the races with his parents.
How funny. We discovered, I haven't even given everybody our weekend dining extravaganzas. We discovered a breakfast joint in
Metairie?
Not in Metairie, no.
Mid-City?
Nope, right adjacent to the quarter.
The Marigny.
The Marigny.
Sure.
Who Dat Coffee Cafe.
Nice.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. Tina, it's so funny. Tina has a chicken fried steak. I had
everybody has that for breakfast, don't they?
Well, my wife, God bless her, she's a doer and a good doer. And so the kid comes to the table with the two plates, chicken fried steak, and he starts to lean the chicken fried steak in my direction. They have one of their signature dishes, if not their signature dish, Not Yo Mama corn cakes. With cheddar in between them, then a kind of a Mornay sauce with shredded hard-boiled egg, and then bacon and green onion all over the top of it.
That's under the low cholesterol side of the menu?
Unbelievable. It was out of this world. Who Dat Coffee Cafe. And then we had the funniest experience because we went to Mid-City, and literally, as Tina and I are on, we went to Brown Butter.
Good spot.
And that was very good. And had Benny's. And as we're sitting down, I get a text from Frank Miramonte. Just out of the blue. I mean, he must have seen that we were in New Orleans, but he couldn't have known that we were on Carrollton. And he says, Venezia, one of my top five pizzas in the U.S. And so I immediately sent him the picture of the neon sign that I had just, I literally, not 6 minutes earlier, had taken a picture of the neon sign. And I said, we just walked by it. He says, go see Tony. So, all right. So we went. And so we discovered this unknown throwback Italian pairing of Venezia and then Braccato.
Yeah, very nice.
For the ice cream and gelato.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Got a slice of spumoni, which is one of my favorite things in the world, and the real thing too. I mean, the individual the colors are flavored individually with the almond paste. Out of this world, Bracato, and apparently they've been here 100 years.
They've been there forever. That sign in front of their place, it predates me, and I'm 57 years old, so that's been around a long time.
They had Michelle Lovell, I talked to Michelle, said she tried to go there earlier in the evening, apparently, and they were lined up out the door. We were there before as they were closing at like 8:45, and she said that they used to be in the quarter, and then they moved to Mid-City.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Yeah.
Well, it quarter of nine, and the place was thronged. There's the Spumoni slice.
Nice.
That's
the before, not the after picture.
The after picture is wiped out. So
this is my town. I grew up here. You know that, and I'm very proud of it. Two things: great food, but also great people.
Yeah, people just
always have a smile. They're always wanting to help. You can't meet a stranger here. You know, it's just that kind of town. So it makes it, you just feel at home.
Yeah.
I like it a lot.
Well,
I'm proud of it.
And it's so, I tell you, the town, as I said 3 years ago, even in the wake of Katrina, the town looks spectacular. And the ongoing work, the ongoing in every neighborhood, this, mm-hmm. by the way, this neighborhood around the track, this is going to be Park Slope, Brooklyn, in about 10 minutes. And Greenpoint, what's going on around the track is very encouraging.
Yeah, no, they're having a rebirth here around the racetrack, and the neighborhoods are improving dramatically. And it's fun to watch. You know, my first job here at the racetrack, here at the fairgrounds, when I was in school during the Christmas holidays, I was a sophomore in college. So we're going back to 1977. I was hot walking during the Christmas holidays. I think I was working for Frank Brothers then. He was Jack Vanberg's assistant trainer, so I guess my check came from Vanberg. But the job was supposed to last 12 days. I think I lasted 6 before I couldn't do it anymore. So
I've heard that.
I had a little time where I was wondering, can I do this job? Because it starts real, real early. But as you get older, it's easier to wake up early.
Well, yeah. I sent you the buyer fig, because I try to keep horseman's hours myself. I'm a 4:30 type, and you were shocked that I was up, that was
the day after the big races. I figured you were probably working all evening getting ready. I was surprised you were up early.
No, I can't help it. Plus, I'm still the California, that or West Coast, the trip to Vegas. I mean, you know, get up at 2 a.m. and 1 a.m. and
of course.
Hours. By the time we get home, I'm sort of, it's good that we're working our way east. Tina and I are vacationing the next few days. Mobile tonight and tomorrow.
Great town.
Savannah.
Go see the USS Alabama. It's sitting in Mobile Bay. Bring you back to the war.
Very
My
cool.
dad is a World War II veteran and served in the Navy. He was in the Pacific during that war. And I bring it up because that generation, we have the World War II Museum here in New Orleans.
Yeah, beautiful.
That generation of young men, I just don't think they make them like that anymore.
No.
You know, and it really, when the country said we need you, to a man, they were all there. Pretty cool.
Well.
And maybe I'm sidestepping a little bit, but if I could ask a favor of you and your listeners, my dad is in the hospital. He's 94. I'm going to see him right after we leave here. I believe in prayer.
Well,
so I hope everybody will say a little prayer for my father.
Absolutely. And I was going to ask, if he was, because the way you were referencing, it sounded like he was still alive.
Yeah, he's still alive, and he still has all his senses. I visited him in the hospital yesterday, and he's got a good view of the Mississippi River, which is, he grew up along the river. He made his living along the river. So he's got a great view, and we got high hopes that everything will go well today.
Your dad must have signed up. He couldn't have been, was he, 17?
No, he was a little bit older. He started his freshman year of college at Tulane, and he took a break and went and served for the for the nation. And I had the honor of going to the World War II Museum with him, and he told me a lot about World War II that he'd never mentioned to me before. I've seen my father cry twice. When his dad passed away and I was young, I was probably 10 years old, I saw him cry. And when he spoke of the war, when he spoke of World War II, he cried. And, you know, for those that served, which I didn't, but I'm very respectful and for each and every one of them, war is a horrible thing. And it's a last resort, but that war had a purpose, and uh, it not only changed the way our nation went, but it changed the way the world went.
Might need to call upon that under the current climate, actually, and redouble down those efforts.
Be careful. I think leaders, and I'm sure they are, need to be really careful before they make a decision like that. So anyhow, let's get off of that.
That was tremendous, and it's funny because it comes up because we went to a couple of the cemeteries at the end of the trolley line and streetcar line, and walked Greenwood and the other one across the street and one of the Jewish ones, and it you see all the markers, all the military markers, and they're unbelievable. I mean, it's when you see, you see kids anywhere from 18 to 30, particularly. It's it'll get you. And the Katrina, mm-hmm. the Katrina Memorial over there. Is moving too.
Check out the Folds of Honor. I'm a big supporter of their efforts and a member, and they really do some really really good things. Next time you're on an airplane, and they tell you to, give a round of applause for the military people that are getting off there. Don't do like I used to do, which is give that applause and then forget about it, and go on about my way. Really, really, really understand what those men and women do, their sacrifice, so that we can be and live whatever life we want to live. It's important.
No doubt. There's no doubt. Beautifully said. Tom Amos, everybody. And, of course, you can follow Tom Amos, T. Amos Racing, right?
Tom Amos Racing.
Yeah, Tom Amos Racing. On Twitter, and always one of our favorite visits at any time, especially live, and just perfect, and a great Risen Star weekend, and the Rachel Alexandra, which, of course, the last time we were live on this weekend, we put a lot of money in people's pockets, thanks to you and Valentine.
Sorry I wasn't here this week. I had gone to Ocala just to look at some horses on that particular day.
Well, and one thing I didn't bring up is how it's a good thing you weren't around, because if you had talked her up, she would have been 3-5 instead of this. And we all looked up after the wire and said, wait a minute. How did she get to 9-5? Yeah. It was like unbelievable the money she took, computer pounding at the end. That must have been ridiculous.
It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun to see her perform. Steve, I can't thank you enough for having me. It's always a great interview, and thanks for putting up with my views on other things besides racing.
That's what makes you should be on television. You should talk to one of those networks about doing some. Oh wait.
All right, man.
Tom Amos,
thank you so
folks.
Much.
Tremendous. Let's take a break. We got to find Brett Calhoun. I told Brett. Brett said, how about 8:45? I said, I don't know. Amos is tough to pull up. Back after this, the Fairgrounds.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Tickets to the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival are on sale now. New York's premier three-day racing festival returns to historic Belmont Park June 6th through 8th. Buy tickets today and enjoy trackside reserve seats, or enhance your experience with one of our premium hospitality packages to make this an unforgettable event. Grandstand admission starts at $15, and three-day festival passes are also available. Buy now at Ticketmaster.com or visit BelmontStakes.com. The Belmont Stakes, where champions are crowned.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Hi, John Pirana here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.